This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Many people on both sides of the abortion issue think that this month's Supreme Court ruling has brought the court one step closer to overturning Roe v. Wade, which legalized abortion in 1973. On May 23rd, the Supreme Court upheld a federal regulation that bars federally financed family planning clinics from discussing abortion with their patients. Even if the pregnancy is life-threatening to the woman, a counselor at a federally funded clinic is not allowed to mention abortion as an option or to refer the patient elsewhere for abortion counseling. My guest, Dr. Irving Rust, was the primary plaintiff in the case. He's the medical director of a Planned Parenthood clinic in the South Bronx. The clinic provides family planning counseling and prenatal care. It has a well baby clinic, a sexually transmitted disease program, and in a branch of the center that receives no federal funds, it provides abortions. We invited Dr. Rust to talk with us about what it was like to be represented in a Supreme Court case. Planned Parenthood and the ACLU asked him to be the plaintiff. I asked Dr. Rust if there was ever any debate about whether the plaintiff in this case should be a woman.
No, I don't think so. I'm the medical director of the Planned Parenthood clinic, and I'm an Afro-American physician. I don't think that it had to be particularly a woman to make this particular case. It's like with on both sides. If you have empathy, you don't necessarily have to be a woman. I have great empathy for women. I come out of a community. I grew up in Harlem. I came out of a community of Black and Hispanic women. My parents were of that mix. And so I have great empathy for women and for poor people. And I come out of a poor background, so I feel that I was as good a plaintiff as any, even not being a female.
Have you performed abortions yourself?
Yes, I have, and I've delivered babies. That question was asked to me recently on a radio program. How do you feel about abortions? Well, let me explain something to you. I did my residency in New York in 1965 to 1968, prior to abortions being illegal. During that period of time, women were dying and near death when I was a resident, a young physician at Lincoln and Jacoby Hospital in the Bronx. And I saw all of the horror stories that you can imagine. People have forgotten that period of time. So what I'm trying to explain to you is that I feel that a woman has to make her own decision. Once she makes that decision, then with abortions being legal, and the reason they became legal was because of these thousands of women who died and were near death during these early days prior to abortions becoming legal. So I feel very strongly that what I'm doing is not killing people, but I'm helping to save lives. I'm helping to save women's lives, which I had to do prior to this period of time when abortions became legal.
Dr. Rust, could you tell us what, for you, was the high point and low point of the Supreme Court trial?
Well, the high point was just coming into the Supreme Court to see the American system work, to have this case go all the way up to the Supreme Court, to sit there and watch the nine justices and to hear the system work. As you know, the case was developed by a brilliant young lawyer named Rachel Pine at the American Civil Liberties Union, and then Dr. Lawrence Tribe, Professor Tribe of Harvard, came in and presented it before the Supreme Court. It is an awe inspiring position to sit there and hear the arguments and to see men like Marshall up there, who I admire very greatly, and to see the liberals that I felt were important to the court. I'm sorry the court has become conservative, and I feel that the decision is a poor decision that I think eventually will be turned around. The low point was that I thought we might win the case, and I was disappointed when I heard David Souter, the new justice, point several pointed questions at the Solicitor General, Kenneth Starr. I thought he might be liberal. He might think a certain way, but of course I was wrong, and I was disappointed and really quite shocked at the decision.
I'm interested in your comments on some of the judge's rulings. Judge Rehnquist, who supported the decision, he was in the he was in the majority, he basically said if government doesn't have to pay for abortion for poor women, it would strain logic to force it to pay for abortion counseling.
Yeah. Well, you know, Judge Rehnquist is basically saying that we're not changing anything. A woman would be able to get all the rights under the situation. The only thing is preventing her is being indigent and poor. Well, what he's basically saying is that we've got two systems of medical care in our country, one for poor people and one for rich people. And in my mind, a government, a democratic government, the purpose of government is to raise people up, especially in our particular situation. We have so many problems. And the major problem of the country right now, is economics, the poverty. We're being devastated. People are being devastated in this country by problems of poverty. And all of the women I work with are poor. I see this every day. They have a myriad of problems. And to place this, another barrier in their way, to me is abominable. I'm just terribly devastated. And I just feel so badly for my clients and my patients.
Do you have any regrets about taking this to the Supreme Court? After all, now you've ended up setting a precedent that many consider a setback not only to the pro-choice movement, but to civil liberties in general.
No, I don't consider it a setback. When you see a wrong, you've got to attack it, whether you win or right or lose. So it's not a matter of you know. Recently, as you know, I'm an Afro-American physician. Louis Sullivan is an Afro-American physician. Well, when black men get to the position of power, they have a responsibility when they walk the halls of power. They have a responsibility to look back and help, you know, the people that they come from. So I think that by fighting for what I believe in, even though I lose or we lose, it's worth the fight. You can never say don't fight because you're going to lose. You know, that's a chance you have to take.
Does the pro-choice movement feel that there is any recourse now to prevent this regulation from going into effect?
Well, no, I don't think they feel there's any choice now from it going into effect. I think what's going to happen is that organizations like mine have made the decision, like Planned Parenthood New York and Planned Parenthood General, have made the decision that we will not go along with this and we will not accept the funds, that we cannot be gagged. Other organizations which receive money, I think, will have to sit down with their boards and their staff and make a choice of decision. I'm hoping that most of them will do what we do, but I'm not sure. It's a hard choice to make when you need money. Do you accept a little money and give some care, or accept no money and give no care? Our budget is about 18 to 20, in the range of 18 to 20-some percent for the Bronx. We're going to try to make it up by cutting back in certain areas, and hopefully it will we'll be able to survive, and we'll be able to not cut back too much on our care for our patients. Obviously, there's going to be somewhere where we're going to be hurt, and some of our patients are going to not get the full care that we were usually giving them.
Dr. West, do you think that some clinics will have to close if they give back federal funds?
Yes, I do. I think that's one of the problems. And that's what's going to be the decision. Whether if you have to close, is it better to stay open and give some care and not give full rights? Or is it better to stay open and give us, you know, some of it? I think that's going to be a hard choice for a lot of these clinics, a really hard choice. And I'm so sad for that because, you know, it's nice to stand on moral grounds, but sometimes it just kills you to do that.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Irving Rust. He was the plaintiff in the Supreme Court case Rust versus Sullivan, and the decision upheld a ruling that prohibits federally funded family planning centers from discussing abortion with their patients. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Dr. Irving Rust is my guest. He's the head of a Planned Parenthood clinic in the South Bronx, and he was the plaintiff in the Supreme Court case on abortion, Rust versus Sullivan. Do you think that patients coming into your clinic would know about the Supreme Court ruling and And if, for instance, you were abiding by that ruling and withholding information about abortion, do you think that they'd know why?
No. I'm not putting down my patients, but people have problems. They're not medically sophisticated. They don't read the New York Times or the Washington Post and all the papers that tell you all about Supreme Court decisions. But when they come in, they have trust in us. We have a fine clinic, I think the finest clinic in the Bronx, and we have a good rapport and a lot of confidence. And how can anyone, to have someone come into you and say, "Doctor, I'm considering abortions. What should I do? What do you think about it? Have I got a right to it?" And they're saying that, our patients are very sophisticated. They know where they can go. Well, I know that many of my patients are not sophisticated. They don't know where to go. Sometimes I get a young girl that comes in. It's 14 or 15 years old, and she's already 12, 13 weeks pregnant. I said, "Well, why didn't you come in here before?" She said, "Well, I didn't know where to go." It happens continually to me and to our staff.
Well, can you give us a sense of the range of reasons that the women at your clinic sometimes opt for abortion?
Oh, God, I mean, it can be so many things. First place, they make a mistake. A young kid has her first couple of sexual encounters and gets pregnant and doesn't want to leave school. Can you imagine here, you have a poor black Hispanic kid who gets pregnant. Now, her chances of ever getting to Harvard and Yale are completely remote. But she might make it with some luck, to the City University, to John Jay College. Well, we're eliminating that chance completely. She won't be able to join the mainstream of our society. Some women come in and they make the choice because they're breaking up with their husband, or they have a poor relationship with their husband, or they have five or six or seven kids and they can't have another kid, economically or psychologically or emotionally. I mean, how can I tell a woman, "Yes, these are your, we understand that, but I'm going to refer you for prenatal care," whatever your problems are. Well, you know she's not going to. You know, I've worked with women, I told you back, all the way back in the 60s. I know women will make their, whatever economic status they come from, they will make their own decisions about their own body. It's the most individualistic thing that we have, the most important right that we have, and no one's going to take it away from them. Me, the Congress can help them. The president can't take it away. The Supreme can't take it. They're not going to let it happen. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give the best medical care I can to protect these women, and that's what I think my job is.
Dr. Rust, were you a practicing physician during the period when abortion was illegal?
Yes, I was. And I've delivered, let me just tell you, I never did a legal abortion, but I delivered thousands of babies. It's the most beautiful thing for an obstetrician to deliver babies. I wish this was the real world, was everyone was happy, everyone had the perfect marriages, that all babies that came in the world were wanted. But that's not the real world we live in. And you know it, and I know it, and everybody out there should know it. Abortions are not an enjoyable thing to do, believe me, and I don't do it with any joy. But I know it's a necessity, and it has to be done. If not, you're going to have a lot of women that are going to be dead and dying again.
How did you handle the question of abortion when it was illegal to get one or to give one?
Well, when I was a resident, even at that period of time, the changes started to take place. What happened when I was a resident at Jacoby and Lincoln Hospital, what happened is that we had small committees that started in the hospital. You would have a psychiatrist, an internist, a hospital administrator, and an OBGYN man. And they would talk over a woman who would make an appeal for an abortion. They would talk over her needs. And if the needs were met, the New York State allowed you to do an abortion at that period of time. That was in the late 60s, just prior to the decision. So it had started even at that period of time where they realized that something had to be done, or women were going to continue to hurt themselves and kill themselves in trying to get an abortion.
What made you eligible for a legal abortion in that period?
Oh, psychiatric. You said that you were going to hurt yourself, or you were going to commit suicide, or that you were so emotionally distraught that your family was falling apart. you had some kind of medical problem like diabetes or hypertension that would put yourself at risk for another long term pregnancy to term. Those are the kind of things that we had to make judgments on at that time.
I don't know if you'd feel comfortable discussing this or not, but I'm wondering if you knew at the time of doctors who performed abortions illegally who you felt you could recommend patients to.
Well, let me just tell you. I never recommended patients for abortions, but most of my professors who were all white at the time, and just trying to bring that out because the wealthy women who were white at the particular time were all sent by their private doctors, and all my professors were had private practices. You know, they taught us in the hospital as part of their helping young physicians, but all of the professors sent their patients on airplanes to Puerto Rico, Mexico, or not Cuba, because Cuba obtains, but they used to send them to Cuba. So every woman who wanted an abortion, who was wealthy, could get on an airplane sent by their private physician to Puerto Rico or Mexico and get it done well, get it done. It wasn't legal, but it was done without, because you were paying a lot of money, it was done safely. So I remember those days. By the time I got out, the law had just about changed. I was 2 years before I was in practice, and I didn't perform any abortions, and I was just building up a practice. So I didn't have an opportunity to send anybody or to refer anybody for an illegal abortion.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Irving Rust, and he was the plaintiff in the Supreme Court case Rust versus Sullivan, and this is the case that was just decided on last week, and the Supreme Court ruled to uphold a ruling that prevents federally funded family planning clinics from giving out any information about abortion. So what do you see happening in the near future at your Planned Parenthood clinic, the one that you direct? You're going to give back federal funding so that you don't
have
to...
Well, we won't give it back. We just won't accept it because we've been paid up until recently. So
I see.
Well, we won't be giving any money back. From what I understand, we have 30 to 60 days, and they will ask us to sign a form that we will follow the regulations. We will not sign the regulations, and then obviously... Obviously, they will cut off the funds for the future. So I think as of 60 days from the day of the decision, we will no longer be receiving funds. Our program, we have a great program for our students upstairs. We have a two-level clinic. We have a learning program for our students. I regret that, but I have a feeling that will be cut back somewhat, our teaching program. I think we're going to try to cut back on all different levels and not hurt any one program completely. I'm hoping that we'll be able to meet most of the needs, although I know it's not going to be complete.
Let me ask you, what's to prevent a clinic that opposes this ruling from taking federal money and still talking about abortion with their patients?
You know, and I know that what the government is going to do and what the right to life is going to do is they're going to send people in there to test it. They're going to send someone in who's pregnant and ask if I want an abortion, can I have it? And if you said yes, or you can go here or you can go there, or we do abortions here, then they would attack you. We feel that's somewhat dishonest. We should stand on our principles, and that we should say we're not going to accept the money, and we're not going to be dishonest about it. That's the other side, and I don't think we should play their game.
Tell me on a personal level why you don't feel you could uphold this regulation, why you feel you couldn't deal with a patient and not mention abortion if you felt it was relevant to their need.
Terry, I have four children. That's what my family and my wife decided we wanted. I wanted more. She didn't want any more. For me to have said to her or to any woman, I want you to go for prenatal care, how can I apply different standards for my own standards that I would have for myself? In other words, Justice Scalia has 14 children. Fine. He's a Catholic. Beautiful. That's what he wants for himself. Fine. If a person comes in and they want something for themselves, how can I honestly, as a doctor, beside being a doctor, how can I not give her what she wants? How can I put my demands, my thinking on her life? I don't go home with her at night. I don't know what her life is like. She knows what her life is like. So how can I personally put my demands on her?
So tell me what you think of the legal system now. I mean, not very many people in this country end up being the plaintiff in a Supreme Court case. You're one of those few people, and you lost.
Yes.
Give me your impressions now about the Supreme Court.
You know,
I don't mean the specific justices in it, but how the system works from your perspective, from one of those few people who actually was represented in the case.
The system works, but the problem is that the system works better for some people than other people. I think the Supreme Court is going to lose a lot of its prestige in this particular situation, not just this case, but I think, you know, we usually say our nation is a nation of laws and not of men. Well, when you really look at it, it's really men making the laws. So when you bend those laws to the way you want them to be bent and not look at the moral issues, you lose credibility. And I think the Supreme Court, I think the government in these particular situations will lose a great deal of credibility. And I think it will pull down the visual zation of the court being a staunch last bastion of rights. And I think you're going to see that in the future. Linda Greenhouse wrote an article in the New York Times Week of Review. She's a law correspondent of the New York Times. And she said that this is an activist court. This court is trying to turn back all of the changes that took place during the Warren administration, tenure of the Supreme Court. And I think what you're going to see is that period of time we had great respect for the court. We knew that they were on the side of poor people, of blacks, of Hispanics, of the little guy in our country, you know. Well, I think that you're going to see that go. And I think the respect is going to hurt the court and the government terribly. And I'm sorry for that because they should be the ones out there helping it. It helps the nation for us to go forward. It uplifts us to help the poor person. It doesn't help to push them farther down.
On a personal level, how do you feel about having your name now a part of American legal history?
Well, you know, I'm a sort of a buff, a history buff. I had thought about becoming a history teacher, and my family and I are tickled pink. My wife's family has a background of American history. One of her ancestors was a slave spy. Her name was Sarah Bowser. So our family is really tickled that we have it on both sides of our family. We're in the American history books, and we're really tickled pink. And I'm particularly tickled pink to be part of American history. It's nice. It's part of Americana, and I'm glad to, you know, be part of that.
Dr. Rust, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Terry, for having me.
Dr. Irving Rust, Medical Director of the Planned Parenthood Center in the South Bronx. I'm Terry Gross. This is Fresh Air.